as leader of this Conservative Party. I wish to say here and now how much I condemn New Labour's astronomical spending on advertising. I'm disgusted at the waste. I'm disgusted at the profligacy. And most of all, I'm disgusted they spent all that money and didn't even bother to throw any work my way.
Okay, Mr. Haig, if you finished warming up your voice, could you say what's on the card, please?
Very well. Ron Seal does exactly what it says.
Dead Ringers.
Welcome to Film 2001 with me, Jonathan Ross, the man with a mouth filthier than a tramp's vest. With the runaway success of Anne Robinson hosting the American version of The Weakest Link, which British game show host will be the next to give his show the big Hollywood makeover?
So, hello, I'm Richard Whiteley, welcoming you to Countdown Stateside. And let's see what sort of state our contestants are in after that last letters round. Okay, Jack Nicholson, what did you end up with?
Well, Richard, I looked at my freaking letters. Huh? And I got freaking. That's seven goddamn letters. Huh?
Okay, and what about you, Robert De Niro?
Are you looking at me, Richard? Are you looking at me? I tell you, I gotta tell you, I got freaking as well. But mine's got eight letters, because I put a goddamn G at the end. Huh? You put a G at the end of goddamn freaking? Yeah, that's right. So I got a longer freaking word than yous. So what are yous gonna do about it, huh? I'm gonna tell you what I'm gonna do about it, boy. I'm gonna ask Carol for one from the top, two from the bottom, and three from anywhere else. And I'm going to solve the goddamn countdown conundrum within the 30-second time limit, and then I'm going to win myself a goddamn Collins dictionary and pencil set.
I am the new London mayor. I am, and with May Day approaching, I think we must all cast our minds back to the riots of last year. I must warn everyone against a dangerous section of society bent on vandalism, by defacing our great statues and making life in the capital a misery for all. You see, they come out from nowhere, descending on our great public squares and leave everyone else to pick up the pieces. I am referring, of course, to the pigeons. Well, we've got to get rid of them. I mean, we don't want the anarchists getting poo all over their shoes again while they're smashing up McDonald's, do we? So I say, smash the state, I'll be great. And don't forget, I mean, capitalism kills.
Hello and welcome to the South Bank Show. I'm Melvin Bragg. A second-class return to Nottingham, please. Tonight, we look back at the career of one of Britain's finest thespians, a man who in his day was spoken of in the same reverential tones as Olivia and Gielgud. I'm referring, of course, to Walter Gabriel. Here's Walter at the peak of his form.
I'm afraid, Walter, that Grace is dead. She died in a fire, a terrible fire, in a barn.
Oh, well, that's a shame, Dan. Me old pal, me old dear, me old beauty.
Walter Gabriel pioneered the technique of placing the words me old pal, me old dear, and me old beauty seemingly at random at the end of every sentence. And in doing so, influenced a whole generation of actors. Brian Blessed was one.
I tried to be as good an actor as Walter, but my me old pal was barely passable. My me old dear was pedestrian, and my me old beauty was the laughingstock of Rada. So I just had to resort to shouting and guffawing instead.
Walter Gabriel's influence on a whole generation of actors was never more evident than in this clip from the classic 70s BBC drama Elizabeth, where Her Majesty is sentencing Mary Queen of Scots to death.
Your Majesty, I beseech mercy be shown towards the Scottish Queen. She is foolish, but her foolishness is not born of malice, but of youthful cadence.
People think that I am merely a weak and feeble woman. Well, I may have the body of a weak and feeble woman, but I have the heart and mind of a king, and a king of England too, me old pal, me old beauty.
Indeed, Your Majesty, but sentencing her to death, that won't get the pigs in.
BBC Radio 4, I'm Brian Perkins. I want your clothes, your boots, and your motorcycle. And now, another look at what's coming up on Radio 4 later. 200 kilos of grade A Colombian cocaine for £250,000 in used non-sequential notes. Gentlemen, a pleasure doing business with you. That's the exchange with me, Brian Perkins, and Joaquin the Condor Gonzalez.
I'm Trevor MacDonald, and this is the lifestyle and gossip magazine show that we call The News at 10. The Weakest Link has taken America by storm after making its debut on NBC this week.
So, America, as a country, you've hit new lows of feebleness in your pathetically short history. You're all called stupid names like Biff and Bobby Sue. And you can't even pronounce simple words like aluminium. Who's letting you down? Who is the biggest dumb fat ass among you? Who's the square peg in the Oval Office? It's time to vote off the weakest president. President Reagan, you voted for President Clinton. Why?
Arnold, I... he wasn't fit for the post. Could you remind me who I am and why?
I'll tell you why you're here, because your would-be assassins can't shoot straight. President George W. Bush, you've nominated as the weakest president of the USA...
Mr. Cunningham from Happy Days, that's right.
Understand the rules.
To be honest, I'm failing to understand or as the codifactory completitude of this entertainness. If you cannot expressify yourself in the more elementary fashionitude, people ain't gonna understandify you.
President Lincoln, you voted for yourself. Why?
Ma'am, I could not in all honor vote for another man. I claim not to have controlled events, but confess plainly that events have controlled me.
Well, that's the stupidest thing you've said since tonight I think I'll go to the theater. President Clinton, you may have run the economy competently, but it seems your Republican predecessors don't like your antics, so with most votes, you are the weakest president. Goodbye.
Can you say that again?
Didn't you hear me, cigar boy?
No, I heard you. I just really want you to say that again.
Now, Claire Short, bulgy ears, bags under the nose, starry hair. What are we to do about the asylum seekers? Raised eyebrow.
Well, I can't say anything, Prime Minister, because you seem to have wired my jaws together. Surely, Prime Minister, as Overseas Development Minister, I should be the one taking control of this.
No, Claire, assertive tone, sweat-stained underpants. I only gave you the job because Cherie's feng shui expert said that you and John Prescott would cancel each other out. Look, there are Tory MPs claiming that there are people going in and out of this country without a bio leave, taking jobs they're not even suited for and not even bothering to speak the language. I need someone who can get the message across that this simply is not the case.
Prime Minister. Incredible politics.
On second thoughts, Claire, yes, you can take it.
BBC Radio 4. I'm Charlotte Green. For love, life and laundry. And now, pick of the week with Kate Adie.
I'm reporting a scene of untold misery from a region blighted by tragedy. I see a haunted face just meters from mine and recognize it instantly as that of myself, Kate Adie. Even the most brutal of totalitarian regimes would shy away from inflicting the torture of an entire week's output of thought for the day.
Good morning, everyone. I was preparing for this morning's thought for the day when something struck me. Yes, it was John Humphreys with a hammer. As I lay dazed on the studio floor, I thought, oh, don't worry, some paramedics will probably turn up. They usually do.
When I thought that onslaught had ceased, it made me unprepared for the creeping barrage of sheer inhumanity and inanity that exploded into my ears on Saturday morning.
Yes, hello and welcome to Home Truths. I've had a letter this week from a Mr. G. Evans of Pontypridd on the subject of how many black fruit pastels you get per tube.
But even that dwindled into nothing compared with the horrors that awaited to ambush me at 7 p.m. every night. Every time I ventured forth into Ambridge, just one thought entered my head.
Oh, no!
You have shown great bravery, slave. What is your name?
My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius. Father to a murdered son, husband to a murdered wife, and I will have my vengeance in this life or the next. Me old dear, me old pal, me old beauty.
Hello, Philip here. How can I help?
Hello, is that Keystone Records?
Yes, it is.
And you're one of the artist and repertoire directors?
I am, yes.
Oh, very, very good. Forgive this call out of the blue. It's William Hague from the Conservative Party.
Hello.
I'm just taking a little bit of time to canvass opinion from informed people across the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of this idea, in principle? In the run-up to the election, I was thinking about releasing a single. Just to...
Is this truly William Hague?
Indeed.
William, well, we have to talk seriously about which song you'd actually want to record.
I've actually done an early demo, which I'll just play for you now, and you can tell me what you think of it. I've decided at this stage to do a cover version rather than an original song. And the one that I have chosen is in the charts now, I believe. That one by Nelly Furtado.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Like a Bird. Hang on, I'll tell me what you think. Here we go.
Okay.
Here it is. You're beautiful, that's for sure. You never, ever fade. You're lovely, but it's not for sure that I won't ever change, and that my love is great, and that my love is true. I'm like a bird on my way. I don't know where my home is, I don't know where my soul is, and maybe all I need for you to, I'm like a bird. I don't know where my home is, because I'm like a bird, like a pigeon or a chaffinch. So what do you reckon?
Well, I think you're certainly going along the right lines there.
Yeah, you know what I mean? No, Lennox, it's no good, you know, being all tense, you know, before a big encounter like this, you know. You'll be all right, you're quicker than him, you know. Just don't get caught on the back foot, yeah? You know, Lennox, to combat the stress of my Tyson fights, I always tried to relax by lying flat on my back.
You know, they've been, like, saying terrible stuff about me, like saying that I'm gay. Lennox. Let me speak one macho man to another.
the best way to combat such outrageous slurs is, like me, to carry yourself in a rough and tough way, adopting with your voice a deep, gruff, street-smart patter which will portray to the world at large your overtly heterosexual nature.
Oh, boy, definitely, definitely, you guys are right. On this night of all nights, my sexuality should not be an issue.
Lennox, you must go out there and see off your opponent, blow by vicious blow.
Hello, and welcome back to So Graham Norton. Now, my next guest is a big macho boxer who a little birdie tells me doesn't mind being face down on the canvas. It's Lennox Lewis!
Don't worry, we'll be right behind you because we believe in you.
Yes, and because you have very nice buttocks.
Hello, and welcome to Film 2001 with me, Jonathan Ross. Colourful clothes, colourful language. So with plans afoot to make yet another Psycho sequel, and what changes will there have been at the Bates Motel?
So, Doc, why do you think Bates did it?
Because the man's insane. Not only does Bates have a psychotic mother fixation, he's also harbouring under the delusion that he's one of Britain's most popular DJs.
Well, there was a man, let's call him Bates, Simon Bates. And I guess you could say things were going pretty well for him. He had a job running a motel. And he had a steady girl, his mother, let's call her mother. And she was everything Simon could have wanted. She was pretty, she was clever, she was dead. But then along came this girl. She was on the run and needed a room. And let's just say Simon brutally murdered her in the shower. And after that, he felt kind of confused and alone. And when he went into the house and his mother said, "Hey, Simon, what's wrong?" That was when Simon realized that the hideous, emaciated, white-haired figure in the chair was not his mother at all. It was Jimmy Savile. And they were presenting Top of the Pops in 1978, and then they introduced See My Baby Jive by Wizard, and things didn't seem quite so bad after all. It's just coming up to 11:15.
BBC Radio 4, I'm Brian Perkins. I love the smell of Charlotte Green in the morning. Number one film at the moment is Bridget Jones's Diary. I've seen it. It was rubbish. So instead, I've been keeping my own. Brian Perkins' Diary. Monday, read the news on Today program. Smoked 3 cigarettes, V bad. Stubbed one out on James Naughty's 3rd nipple, V legit. Introduced myself to Sister Lavinia Byrne. Took her for a drink on Tuesday. We were making love by Wednesday. And on Thursday, Friday and Saturday, we chilled on Sunday. Then, on Monday, I had to read the shipping forecast. Dogger, good. North Etzera, bad. Thunderbolts and lightning, very, very frightening. Brian Perkins, Brian Perkins. Oh, Brian Perkins, let me go. Beelzebub has a devil put aside for me. For me. For me. That's the end of the forecast.
Hello, loves. Thora here, soldiering on at the ripe old age of 128. Now, I gather some charity, Johnny, says there should be special rooms in care homes for the elderly residents to have sex. Well, here at the BBC Artists Retirement Home, we think that's nonsense. If I want to get intimate with, oh, I don't know, Clive Dunn... can just use the stationery cupboard. It's the best place for it. And if Clive loses leverage, I just staple his slacks to the photocopier. We all have our own methods. Donald Sinden takes his lady friends to the washroom, don't you, Donald?
Yes, indeed. I find the quick spin program on the tumble dryer the perfect thing to cover my gloriously resonant libidinous moans.
And dear old Lord Albert Steptoe has his fun just about anywhere he pleases.
Oh, yeah. I don't mind where I am when I try it on. It makes it more of an adventure, doesn't it?
Oh, you dirty, dirty Albert, man. And I thought that Jean Whitfield had standards.
So, you see, it just goes to show we don't need special rubs for sex in old people's homes. Although, a pump-action staple gun wouldn't go amiss. Bye-bye.
You should not have come here, Obi-Wan. Now the circle is complete.
If you strike me down, I will become more powerful than you can possibly imagine. My old pal, my old dear.
Your powers are weak, old man. Now I am the master.
I will call upon Yoda.
And help you, I must. Talk backwards. Handicap it is. Beauty, me old pal, me old dear.
He will help me defeat the dark side, evil Vader.
Oh, perhaps, old man. But that won't get the pigs in.
Anne Widdicombe, the gorgeous pouting virgin, gazed longingly as the devastatingly attractive interviewer slid into the chair opposite. As their eyes locked together, Anne's heart leapt skywards like a majestic caged eagle spreading its powerful wings and taking flight untethered for the first time. Anne sighed as finally her interrogator spoke, the deep, booming, manly voice making her quiver like a tuning fork.
Hello, I'm Mariella Frostrup.
As Mariella's voice, fashioned by decades of back-breaking voiceover work, tarmacked its way directly into Anne's heart, it seemed to beckon her to explore hitherto forbidden worlds of passion.
Welcoming you to Youth Vote. My first guest tonight is Anne Widdicombe. Anne, are you all right?
A world where powerfully built women can stand proudly atop Diana's temple and suck freely from the well of sapphic pleasure. A world where Sandy Toksvig isn't forced to eke out a living appearing on Call My Bluff and gargantuan is a term of endearment.
So, Anne, would you encourage young people to get out and vote?
Oh, yes, Mariella, yes. The answer's yes, 1,000 times yes. Draw back the billowing curtain and slip effortlessly into my darkened polling booth. Raise your sharpened pencil aloft and place the tenderest of crosses in my ballot box. Mariella, take me up in your tanned, muscular arms and defrock this gorgeous, pouting virgin with your forbidden passion.
Friggin' Adrian, I thought I was sexy.
Taxi, may I help you?
Yes, hello, my name is Patrick Moore. I need a taxi to Uranus, please.
Oh, where are you? That's what I need to know.
Well, I'm now currently just a few hundred yards from your office, and I need to go from there to Uranus, and I wondered how much.
How about $5?
How many?
$5.
$5 to Uranus. That is very, very reasonable indeed.
Well, it's just a...
Do you know how to get there?
Do we know how to get there?
Yes.
I would think going south on Corny and then making a left on Crockett and going down to Uranus and making a right would get us there.
I think that might. I mean, that's not the route that I'm familiar with. According to my calculations, to get to Uranus, first of all, you need to go to Ganymede and then keep going for 6 months until you reach the face of Mars, then go straight on over the asteroid belt, bare left at Jupiter to receive the Jovian gravitational thrust, and then Uranus is approximately just 98 million miles on the left.
Oh, you want that Uranus. the street. Now we're talking some money. Yeah, we're talking some big money and some preparation time.
Now tell me, sir, do you have a pressure-balanced physiology?
I'm sure by then we'll have it worked out.
We will need to have pressure-balanced physiologists to withstand the gravity on Uranus.
Well, I don't know if we're going to put it down there because I don't. It's kind of hostile.
Yes.
What kind of gear or suit, if possibly, could be made in freezing cold weather and the cold gases. So you have to get back to us in about 5 to 10 years.
This is absolutely extraordinary. You know much more about Uranus than I do.
I was sharing a pot of Earl Grey with Thora Heard just the other day, after Mavis Grimble's wake, when Thora spied an article saying that Gulf War syndrome had finally been recognised as a proper medical condition. A sigh emitted from Thora's crumb-laden face. Those Gulf War veterans think they've had it tough, but they haven't, she said, casually masticating a sponge finger. And my mind was immediately cast back to a warm July evening in 1969, at the height of the North Yorkshire-Lancashire conflict. A heady time, when university students wore flat caps in their hair and urged Wakefield to make macaroons, not war. When me, Peter Salis, Martin Sheen and Mr Pettiforth from Number 42 on point journeyed upriver aboard a helicopter gunship into the heart of darkness. A hellhole that drove even the strongest people insane. Blackpool. Our saga tour of duty was to retrieve Thora. She'd gone to the seaside on a coach trip, ostensibly for a week. But 3 years later, there was no sign of her. And her dinner was now all but ruined. We travelled via Morecambe Bay, accompanied by the psychedelic tunes of the time. Jefferson Airplane's White Whippet and Led Zeppelin's Stan a Stairlift to Heaven. We found Thora squatting in a crude hut made by Billy Butlin. Our worst fears were confirmed. Thora had gone native. She'd seen terrible things no mortal should have seen. The bingo, the crazy golf, and worst of all, the horror, the horror. A summer season of Stu Francis and the Crankies. So, as once again I'm woken in the dead of night by Thora's flashbacks and hear her nightmarish screams of I could crush a grape and fandabby-dozy, I say to those people investigating Gulf War syndrome that they need to realise that what those people experienced could never compare to the horrors provided by the English Tourist Board. But, of course, they won't, will they?
You've been listening to Dead Ringers. It was performed by John Culshaw, Jan Ravens, Mark Perry and Phil Cornwall. It was written by Tom Jameson and Niv Fanton. John Holmes, Lawrence Howarth, John Culshaw, Dave Cohen and Paul McKenzie, Anthony Bond and Danny Fielder and Mike Heskins. The title music was by John Whitehall. It was devised by Bill Dare. The producer is Mario Steliandis.